I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, yeah, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Coming up this hour, Adam Beasley's going to join us from Pro Football Network. He's going to join us. He's based in Miami. And a lot of action surrounding the Dolphins these days. Tua Tagovailoa and what the Dolphins can do. Week number one win against the New England Patriots. Then got absolutely lambasted on Sunday against the Bills 35-0. We'll talk to Adam about that and many other things around the NFL coming up in 20 minutes from now. Last night, the Green Bay Packers get the win, 35-17, over the Detroit Lions. And, you know, when you look at that final score, you're going to wake up today, look at Aaron Rodgers' numbers, look at Aaron Jones' numbers, and be like, oh, you know, the Packers back on track, right? Well, Lions gave them fits in the first half, led at halftime, and took a lead into the third quarter. And it took a big third and fourth quarter, second half by Rodgers and company, to kind of make it look like a comfortable Packers win. And I hesitate to say the Packers are back to contender status. Now, coming into the season, I thought that they should be taken seriously. I mean, back-to-back NFC Championship game appearances, and I would have thought that Rodgers coming into the season has a bit of a vendetta against the Packers front office, Brian Gutekunst, I'll show you, setting himself up for a big offseason where he'll probably get a different destination. And you know, we saw this from Tom Brady when he was at odds with his front office and he was at odds with his coaching staff for not getting enough respect, etc. You saw a Tom Brady that was uber motivated to come out and dominate and to prove his front office wrong for drafting Jimmy Garoppolo or not giving him the contract that he desired or what have you. I mean, Brady definitely went through things like this. Maybe not as public, but certainly there was angst surrounding, you know, everything that happened with Brady and Garoppolo for a while. And so I would have thought coming into the season, man, Rodgers is going to be locked in, and he is going to absolutely, shred defenses. And I think we've seen that the last 2 years. You know, certainly last year after the drafting of Jordan Love, we saw one of the greatest seasons ever by Rodgers. And, you know, frankly, you had to connect the dots there that Rodgers wanted to prove to the world and his front office, you didn't need to draft my replacement. But week number one was pretty brutal. I mean, very brutal. And, you know, that was an eye-opener for me. Like, wow, maybe Rodgers isn't going to just slay everybody and route to another, you know, screw you type season. So that gave me pause to think that, well, maybe the Packers can't get out of their own way at times this year. And this is going to be a bit of a clunky effort in this kind of bring it all back together with Rodgers there. You know, last night, a great second half doesn't erase that. And you might say, well, DA, why don't you focus more on week two than week number one? Week number one, you throw out. Yeah, but week number one was so bad that one good half against the Lions doesn't erase it. I still think the Packers are supremely talented. And when you have Rodgers on your roster, you can accomplish a lot of things. And the Packers still have most of the same guys that they've gone to back-to-back NFC Championship games with. You saw Aaron Jones last night. It looked great. You know, they've got plenty of weapons to be able to do this, to get back to deep into the postseason. But I don't think that a good half against the Lions erases the stench of week number one against the Saints. And frankly, that loss to the Saints looks worse today than it did a week ago because of how bad the Saints looked on Sunday. So while it's a step in the right direction, Bogues, I don't think you can immediately say, in my estimation, last night's win, you know, wipes away the doubts from week number one.
See, it's funny. I don't know that I necessarily agree that the week one loss looks worse now because of the Saints' performance in week two. It doesn't look better because I don't know if that's the right word, but to me, the way the Saints then played in week two furthers my assessment that week one was more fluke than anything else. That it was not, and at the end, and now that we've seen another game from each team, that it was not a full, complete, sturdy breakdown of what either one of those two teams is. That it just might have been a really, really good day for Jameis Winston lined up against a really bad day for Aaron Rodgers and the Packer defense. So I guess better is the easiest word to use here. It actually made me a little less concerned with Green Bay the way the Saints played in week two. Had the Saints come out and kicked the Panthers' butt in week two, that actually might have made me think more of the Packer loss or worse of the Packer loss, because then I go, oh man, the Saints are really good and the Packers are not in that class. When the Saints throw a dud out there in week two, it makes me go, you know what? Maybe week one was just a randomly poorly timed game for Green Bay and we might have gotten carried away drawing out conclusions from one game for them.
So would you say you consider the Packers then a top four team in the NFC?
Probably fourth would be the best. So we've got the Bucs, we've got the Rams, and then we get into an area where the Seahawks live, the Niners live, and the Packers live. So top five team, I would go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, and of course, it's a 17-game schedule, so one game doesn't define you, and if the Packers end up at 16-1, it's never going to matter. But don't you think that just how awful that was in week number one does have to be considered in right now if you were, if you were discussing, okay, who was the best challenger to the Bucs? Like, if you have that stinker in you against a Saints team that might not be great, doesn't that drop you a little bit into the belief of, okay, maybe the Packers just aren't at that level because they have the potential to look that bad on a given day?
Although it probably did drop them, because if you asked me the same question going into the season, I might have said that Green Bay was the second best team in the NFC. So now I've got them at best case scenario, you know, four or five. So it has dropped me here a little bit. But, and I don't know if you guys discussed this last week and I missed it, but like the Bucs had a 38-3 loss last year and then basically didn't lose again. So, I mean, anyone's capable of getting smoked on a given day. Sometimes it just happens and game gets away from you. And I think what hurts the Packers the most is the timing of it. If that wasn't week one, if that was just a random dud of a game in week six or week seven, I think we would have mostly moved on from it pretty quickly and go, man, that was ugly. You know, this happened, that happened, and we would have been on to whoever they were playing the next week. But because it came off of week one and an entire offseason of everything, of Rodgers being there and not being there, trade him, cut him, whatever, and then they do that, it's easy and maybe logical to make the connection that the crappy offseason, the inconsistent offseason, the questionable offseason led to them just not having it across the board in week one. So the timing really factors in here too. And again, it just anyone can have a bad game. And maybe that's all that was, or maybe it was the first, you know, the first sign of this team not being good enough to stay in the elite in the NFC.
That's fair. And they're also benefited by this division. Vikings are 0-2, Lions are 0-2. And that Bears team does not look anything close to a contender in the division with Andy Dalton there at least. And, you know, how long it takes Justin Fields to get up to speed, and do you go to Nick Foles? So the Packers could end up kind of figuring themselves out, suffer a couple of bad losses, still be the driver's seat to win that division, home playoff game and all of that. Let's go to the Saints now. What's the real Saints? Is it a demolition of the Packers in week number one? Were falling completely on their face in week number two?
This one's more annoying for me because I liked the Saints going into the season. I said this to Sean one of the days where we were in for you. I'm not personally rooting for Jameis Winston. I don't need Jameis Winston to be a productive, good quarterback in the NFL, but I thought there was one in there. Like, I bought into he figured out his eyesight issues, which seemed to take too long for anybody to figure out. And then it was, you know, he sat there with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, and he sold the Drew Brees impact on him really well from the moment Drew retired all the way through the offseason to the beginning of this year. He should have been the quarterback in my mind over Taysom Hill. So we got to that point quickly as well. And then week one comes, and he throws 5 touchdowns, and they win by 35 points. And I thought, you know, they were a playoff team as a wild card, number 2 in the NFC South. And I'm going, huh, all right, maybe I lucked upon something else that's going to make me look smart here. And then they do that on Sunday against the Panthers, where they go from all of those 38 points and 5 touchdowns to what, to 7 points and less than 150 yards against the Panthers? So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think, clearly they're not as good as they were in week one, and I hope they're not as bad as they were in week two. I still think that they skew more towards the positive, but I definitely could end up being wrong here. But they're, to me, they're far more confusing than the Packers. Like, to me, Green Bay will be okay. New Orleans, we still know nothing about.
Yeah, that Jameis Winston week number one looks great on the scoreboard. And you look at the fantasy stats and you're like, wow, 5 touchdowns. That's amazing. He threw for less than 150 yards. So it's like, you know, the Saints got down the field so many other ways, either by defensive plays, good field position, special teams, or running the football. And then Jameis just, you know, capped it off with a couple of, you know, short touchdown passes. I mean, 5 touchdown passes with less than 150 yards passing. I don't know if that's ever been done before. So that's a bit of a lark. And then you come to game number two and they just get smashed to smithereens by the Panthers. Now, the Panthers might be better than we would have thought, farther along in the build than we would have known coming into the season. But it is possible that the Saints are closer to game number two than game number one because the Packers were so off, and because you're never really going to quite get 5 passing touchdowns with 150 yards passing from Jameis Winston. This week is a much better tell of where they are because they travel to New England. They take on a Patriots team that's good, not great. Let's face it, that's a good, not great team with a good, not great quarterback yet. And if the Saints go to New England and lose badly, then we know that, you know what, they're not nearly as good as what week one would suggest. But if they go there and win, it's a real tell of, okay, at least they can beat, you know, pseudo playoff teams. I mean, I think the Patriots are going to be a 9-win team this year, something like that, 9-8, something like that. So if the Saints can go on the road, win, where it's never easy to win at Foxborough, even though the Dolphins just did, it's a little bit closer to what we would know about the Saints and, you know, if they perform poorly, then that week number one seems farther and farther in the rear view.
I might go as far as saying, oh, any loss in New England is a problem for them because they should be better than the Patriots, even in New England. That's a game that they should win if they are as good as I think they are and as others do. They should win that game no matter what. Any loss, but certainly a bad loss, but any loss in New England to me is a problem for them as you're trying to diagnose them in month one.
The Patriots also, by the way, they host Saints and then host the Buccaneers. That's Tom Brady's return back-to-back week. So you know, could be staring at 1-3 here if they do not beat the Saints coming up this weekend. When we come back on the show, Adam Beasley is going to join us, Pro Football Network, as the Dolphins are trying to figure out the severity of Tua's rib injury and what exactly they have in Tua at the quarterback position. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
20 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate you being with us. Trash Tuesday, you can send us your trashes. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on the phone. It's at 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Coming up, Adam Beasley is going to join us from Pro Football Network. The Dolphins are wondering what exactly they've got in Tua Tagovailoa. I think we all are. You know, Tua has now had a myriad of injuries dating back to college, and not just the hip injury at Alabama. He had significant other injuries as well, always seemingly nicked up. And now it's ribs, and they were worried about damage to rib cartilage with the MRI. And I just don't know how you could ever kind of assume that Tua is going to be healthy enough to be your starting guy each and every week for, you know, a long time. Tua needs time. Tua needs experience. Tua needs reps. And it's problematic if he can't stay on the football field. It's impossible for him to get where he needs to get. And remember, the Dolphins are also shopping around. I think there's probably two different, you know, kind of vantage points inside the Dolphins locker room, inside the Dolphins front office. I think some of them in that front office feel as though that Tua is the guy and that they don't need Deshaun Watson. But Bogues, I think some of them also see the star power of Deshaun Watson, and they're like, no, that's the answer. We don't need to, you know, play around with Tua. If you've got Deshaun Watson waiting in the wings, let's say for next season. So I almost wonder, Bogues, if Tua's injuries this year, you know, whatever he is going to be, is really insignificant in some ways, because the decision makers, I don't know about all of them, I don't know if it's a consensus, have already moved on to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, these conversations are so difficult and almost frustrating to me, because you can't trade for Deshaun Watson and you may never be able to trade for Deshaun Watson. And even if you could trade for Deshaun Watson, is Deshaun Watson forever tainted by the things that are going on right now? Like, can you ever relax? Like, if this turns out to be something that he's able to avoid any kind of legal ramifications here, and he's ready to go for week one of next season, can you ever, though, just relax and assume that nothing like this is ever going to come up again with your new franchise quarterback? At one point, I would have written a blank check, contract, draft picks, basically anything anybody wanted to get Deshaun Watson right now. When he was just unhappy in Houston, I would have given almost anything to get him because he's that good and he was that young. But now through all of this, you physically can't do it now. So it's for next season. And even then, I don't know how you're going to feel about what he is as a person and as somebody off the field who you're investing all of this in to play the most important position in all of sports. So I just, I think you're better served right now just taking Deshaun Watson out of your mind altogether. Whether you've got Tua or not, he's just such a non-factor to me. I think you're wasting your time if you're sitting in a front office wondering about what you can do to get Deshaun Watson on your team.
Adam Beasley, NFL insider for Pro Football Network, joining us this morning here on the show. He's based in Miami, so he's got good insight into this. Mr. Beasley, good morning. How are we doing?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
Not much. So let's talk about this Tua Tagovailoa situation. What's the latest on his health?
Well, it's not great. I mean, he got an absolute rib shot from A.J. Epenesa in the first quarter of Sunday's game, and he could barely get off the field, got carted into the locker room. Thankfully, the x-rays were negative. He didn't have any breaks, and the MRI seems to be pretty positive. But I would say he's very iffy to play this week, and my guess is he'll be out.
How split is the front office or the organization on Deshaun Watson? It doesn't feel like it's a consensus.
Well, the question is whether or not they see him at the right price. I think they would all love to have a player of Deshaun Watson's caliber in their locker room. I think if they could turn back the clock and it'd be January 2021 again and there were no allegations and they could just go and make the trade they were going to try to make with the Texans, they would make that trade. But obviously that's not the reality we're living in. I don't think, however, that those 22 allegations of sexual misconduct are going to be enough to dissuade the Dolphins to stop considering Deshaun Watson. I think the more we see from Tua, the more we see from this offense with Tua, the more likely it is they're still going to be in that conversation. Now, the issue is never whether the Dolphins wanted Deshaun Watson or not. It's whether they wanted to meet the price, the asking price the Texans had. And you hear from anywhere from 3 to 4 first-round picks and additional compensation. That's a bananas ask with a guy who still might go to jail. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's indicted by a grand jury and goes to jail. So with that uncertainty, no team's going to pay that price. But if at some point the Texans come to their senses and realize they're not going to get that king's ransom, the Dolphins are going to be at the front of the line trying to make a value play.
So this is absolutely fascinating. So the actual legalities or the good or the bad, whether Deshaun Watson's a good guy or a bad guy, that's not the deciding factor within the Miami Dolphins organization. The deciding factor is whether Tua is good enough and what the asking price is.
Correct. I think that, and again, I'm not speaking for Brian Flores, I'm not speaking for Stephen Ross. This is just my understanding of the situation, is that this is something they could possibly work through. And here's the scenario, D.A., here's the way you should think about it. Remember back in the 2000s when Michael Vick was obviously coming out of prison and had the dogfighting and all that? He was given a second chance by Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles, but he wasn't given that second chance as a starting quarterback. He came back at a very low contract as a backup. He was kind of a wildcat spot player. He's their bells and whistles quarterback. Donovan now was the starter. Well, ultimately, all that firestorm started to die down. Michael Vick showed he could still play, and boom, he's the starter next year. That, in an ideal world, is the path the Dolphins would follow if they ever were able to acquire Deshaun Watson, because Tua was always going to be their starter in 2021. I think that was part of the misconception. The Dolphins were making a play for Deshaun. That means he was going to start week one. I don't think anyone thought reasonably you can make that guy the face of your franchise with all the unknown, with all the allegations out there. But if you can bring him on as the 53rd guy on your roster and he plays 5 snaps a game and Tua is the face of the franchise still, maybe that'll work. And in 2022, there's a settlement reached. He's never charged. The NFL doesn't drop the hammer on him. And there's a path back for him to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. My understanding is that's how the Dolphins saw it. The Texans obviously wanted way more for that role. I mean, if you're gonna trade for a guy of that role, conditional second, maybe a first, if he's cleared everything, he's able to play. But no way is any team going to give up their entire franchise for a guy you just can't count on being available.
Adam Beasley, Pro Football Network, based in South Florida. So the Dolphins themselves don't seem to be caught in the ethics of Deshaun Watson. Do you think there would be pushback from the community if they brought in Deshaun Watson and made him the starter next season?
Yes, to a degree, but D.A., you spent time in South Florida. I'm not saying that we're morally flexible, but we're a bit morally flexible down here. So, I mean, there's certain markets that it's a complete non-starter, but Miami is kind of where lowlifes go, right? I mean, it's kind of the destination for people who want a second chance or want to kind of blend in. And I think he'd be received a lot differently in South Florida than he would be, say, in New York City or Boston or some of these places where the spotlight will be 1 billion megawatts and he can't go anywhere without being on the back page of the New York Post. I think in Miami he'd have a little bit quieter of an existence, and maybe at some point there'd be some, you know, PR rehabilitation for him. But again, this is all conjecture because the Texans, as of now, are not moving off of their negotiating spot, and I don't think they're going to. Maybe the next big benchmark is November, the trade deadline, perhaps they get a little frisky then. But as of now, I don't see him going anywhere.
How do the Dolphins view Tua's health? I mean, I know it's not his fault that he gets fallen on by a huge defensive lineman, but going back to Alabama, I mean, the guy can never stay healthy. That's got to be weighed into whether the Dolphins want to make him the core quarterback, right?
Hurt guys get hurt in football, and Carson Wentz is going through it again, and Tua Tagovailoa is going through it again, and Tua is not a big dude. I mean, he's 6'1", I don't know the weight, but it's not particularly thick. He's on a little bit of weight. And a guy who has a history of getting injured, injury-prone might not be the right word, but injury-susceptible probably is, and Tua is injury-susceptible. He had both ankles worked on when he was in college. Obviously, the major hip injury. He missed a game last year because of a thumb injury. I mean, for 4 years in a row now, he's been dealing with something. Now, granted, playing behind that Dolphins offensive line, I don't know if Paul Bunyan would be able to survive the season without some sort of injury, so I get it. But he's not Paul Bunyan, right? He's a smaller quarterback, and he's gotten a little bit more mobile in year two than year one, but he's still coming off a major reconstructive hip surgery, so he's not running a 4.3 40 by any stretch of the imagination. It puts him in a tough spot. So are you asking me if long-term that's a sustainable plan? A smallish quarterback who gets hurt behind a bad offensive line? I think the answer is no, and we're seeing it play out in real time.
So do you think the Dolphins front office deserves some questions about how they built this roster, how they approach this season, even minus the quarterbacks, after what happened on Sunday after just a 35-0 drubbing by the Bills?
I think it's actually we're too late in raising those questions. I think they've gotten a bit of a free pass. Chris Greer is the general manager. He keeps a low profile. He hasn't spoken in a while. Steve Ross, the owner, hasn't spoken in more than 2 years to the local media. It's by design. They like to keep out of that limelight and avoid the slings and arrows. But let's be honest. If you build a rebuild, if you design a rebuild to be based off of draft picks and you miss on those draft picks, it's a failed rebuild. There's no other way to put it. They've had 6 first-round picks since 2019 and 4 second-round picks since 2019. So that's 10 top 60 picks they've had in the last 3 years. And I struggle to think of one player of that 10 that's a top 5 or 10 player at their position. Maybe Jalen Waddle becomes that. He certainly has shown some promise, but it's been whiff after whiff after whiff. And I think the 2020 draft, if this project ultimately fails, will be the reason why. Tua over Justin Herbert, nobody thinks that's a good idea at this point, okay? Austin Jackson at 18, when Justin Jefferson was still on the board, Austin Jackson, you know, he couldn't block somebody on Twitter, okay, at this point. I mean, he was a turnstile on Sunday. And at least those two are playing. Their third first-round pick was Noah Igbinoghene, who's a healthy scratch every week. He's not even playing. So that's the core of the 2020 draft that you, quote-unquote, tank for, and you're getting very little production in return. That at the end, if this fails, that's going to be the reason why.
That's really interesting. Adam Beasley, Pro Football Network, joins us. Last night, we've talked a lot about the Packers and whether that's a feel-good, get-right win by the Packers, whether it can erase the stench of week number one. How do you view the Packers' first 2 weeks?
Thank God, right? I mean, yesterday was a big wiping the brow and, oh, we dodged a bullet because they didn't look great in the first half. That defense has got some serious questions. I think the offense with Aaron Rodgers will always be fine. It's not a surprise that he looked a little rusty in week one, considering he was hanging out in Hawaii, like, as of late July. I mean, he didn't have a real true commitment to making the Packers better this past offseason, so there's going to be some growing pains at first. But I think the defense is more of a long-term concern, and if they fall short again for I guess, a third straight year, it'll be because they just give up too many yards and too many points.
Do you think that this is Roger's swan song? This is it? Next year he's somewhere else?
No, 1,000%. 1,000%. I think he's playing the game the way it needs to be played. He took his shot in July, and he was not going to get traded. But he negotiated a contract that allows him to go wherever he wants in 2022. That was not an accident. And I think he'll be looking to move on this next offseason.
And so what does Aaron Rodgers command? We were just talking about the crazy expectations of the Texans front office and what they want to get for Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a different situation. Deshaun Watson's still 25 years old, and his contract is a lot more palatable than what Aaron Rodgers' situation would be. But, yes, you're talking about multiple premium picks, and he will have the pick of his destination. I mean, he's not going to go to, you know, Cincinnati. He's not going to go to a market he doesn't want to go to. And it's probably going to be somewhere in the West Coast, or it's going to be Denver, because that's kind of where his roots are. That's where he wants to be, is out that way. But, yes, you're going to give up a lot, but you would not be giving up as much, which is crazy to say, as much for Aaron Rodgers in 2022 as you would have for Deshaun Watson pre-allegations in 2021. Mm. Watson, at this point in his career, is just a more valuable asset.
On the Lions front, I have scoffed at Dan Campbell every step of the way, and I've thought that it's silly and ridiculous and obnoxious and just kind of boneheaded. But they had the comeback against the Niners in week 1, and then last night they had a lead at halftime over the Packers, and they looked pretty good in the first half. Are you a believer in Dan Campbell? He has Miami Dolphins roots.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm a believer in what he's trying to do. I don't think he's ever going to be the X's and O's guy. I mean, he's going to be the I'm going to chew your kneecap off guy. That's what he is. But he's smart enough to surround himself with really smart people, and I think you're starting to see that coaching staff have an impact on a pretty young roster, a pretty talent bereft roster. I had a source call me before the season. Like, I think this is one of the worst rosters I've seen, and yet here they are, you know, as you mentioned, competitive in first or two games. And I think it all starts on the offensive line. They really set the tone as to what they wanted this franchise to be with their first round pick, Penei Sewell, this year, and he's played well, obviously, and they've got something there that they can build around. So, yeah, do I think that Jared Goff is their long-term answer at quarterback? No, I think either next year or the year after they're going to draft one pretty high up in the first round. But I do like the fact they're playing hard, they're playing somewhat disciplined, and they're making the most of a really bad roster.
Adam Beasley writes for the Pro Football Network. Excellent website if you want the daily ins and outs of the NFL. That's profootballnetwork.com. Also follow him on Twitter for the latest, at Adam H. Beasley. My man, good to talk to you this morning. We'll do it again here soon. Thanks.
Great catching up, my friend.
You too. Adam Beasley joining us, Pro Football Network, NFL insider. Standing by is a kind sir.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Mr. Andrew Bogish, Mr. Bogues, what do we got?
DA, after week one's embarrassment, a 17-14 halftime hold to those Lions at Lambeau last night wasn't great for the Packers, but then they won the second half 21-0 to win the game 35-17. Running back Aaron Jones, a hat trick of touchdown catches plus one running for head coach Matt LaFleur.
He's so dynamic. He's such a great player, and not only the running game, but in the passing game, which 3 touchdown receptions is a pretty good night for anybody.
Aaron Rodgers adding a 4th touchdown pass to Robert Tonyan. Jared Goff started well for the Lions, 13-16, 137, 2 scores, but a 3rd quarter fumble fueled the Packer rally. There was also a late pick. His Lions are now 0-2. As we discussed last hour, the Bears had to confirm yesterday that Andy Dalton is their starting QB if healthy. That after Matt Nagy's odd back and forth with a reporter about Dalton's status. Colts QB Carson Wentz dealing with two sprained ankles. The right one is what knocked him out of Sunday's loss to the Rams. And the Niners had three running backs get hurt Sunday in Philly. Jamichael Hasty's out multiple weeks now with a high ankle sprain. Elijah Mitchell has a bad right shoulder. Trey Sermon's in concussion protocols. Both of those men, though, could play Sunday night against the Packers. The AL wildcard race tightened up a bit last night, thanks to the Rays.
1-2 to the leadoff man, Yandy Diaz. Swinging a high fly ball. Goes it deep to left field. Way back toward the track, to the wall. Gone! There ends the streak. And the Rays have the lead at 3-2.
That's from Rays Radio. Tampa Bay, a 6-4 win over Toronto. The Jays now a half game better than the Yankees for the second wild card because New York held off Texas 4-3. The A's took a 4-2 home loss for the Mariners, dropping them two games behind Toronto. Seattle stays three back. The Braves dumped the D-backs 11-4 after the Phillies lost to the O's 2-0. So that's a three-game lead in the East for Atlanta. The Cardinal win streak is 9. After a 5-2 victory in Milwaukee, the Reds outscored the Pirates 9-5, and the Royals took two from Cleveland in Game 1. Salvador Perez hit his 46th homer, the new single-season record for a catcher. And the Warriors said yesterday that Klay Thompson is rehabbing well from his torn Achilles, which followed a torn ACL. Christmas time is the reported target for Klay's first game. DA, back to you.
All right, thank you, Bogues. So as you are listening to right now, my voice has been pretty shot the entire morning. I think a week's worth of morning shows and afternoon shows and meet and greets and games and everything else has taken its toll. And so Bogues and Mraz will take over the steering wheel of the mothership coming up next, and I appreciate them doing so for the final hour plus of the show. We got to as far as we could today to the finish line, and we've set you up with a perfect way to jump things off. Over the weekend at Heinz Field, a Steelers fan had an oopsie. Who to break that down except Mraz? That is next, DA and the DA Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Of what we're doing.
Sorry about that. Excuse me.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, all right, all right, all right. DA, no voice left. Bogus, what the heck did you do to him? As Mraz and Bogus now take over. The guy lands back from Boise. Potatoes, beer, he's got no voice. It's Mraz and Bogus taking you the rest of the way. Full disclosure, I don't really want this public. You haven't heard me for the first 2 hours because there was some potential that we thought baby Mraz could have been here, so I was not around for the first 2 hours. We didn't tell any family this. There were a lot of warning signs. As it turns out, baby Mraz not here. So now I am back, poked in, going to do this from home the rest of the way. But just if anybody's wondering, where the hell's Mraz been? He didn't have a Trash Tuesday. That's exactly what was going on. We had a little bit of a situation at 4 a.m. where we thought maybe, just maybe, the day might be here. It is not here, so I am back with you, Bogus. And what a day for that to happen, for DA to have no voice. Hello, how are you?
So you poked in because the baby didn't poke out. That's where we are this morning.
Yeah, and honestly, perfect segue here. Perfect segue as these segments have been drawn up. A Steeler fan, frankly, pooped his pants on Sunday. So that was a honey, hold the fort on having a baby. A Steeler fan did number two in his pants and stayed in the stadium. The boys need me for a take. So here's where we take over.
Do you like the house we live in? Yeah. Do you like Bob's Blar? Do you like the pool? This all comes from show money, and the show money's about me having takes and doing it myself, having an accident. So let's get back to the house.
So if you haven't seen this picture, it's really simple. Just Google Steelers fan, and use whatever word you want to use for number two, and the picture will come up. It is a guy in a really bad knockoff throwback Jerome Bettis jersey, in his socks, with no pants, no underwear, at a sink in a bathroom at Heinz Field next to a garbage can with crushed beers. And there is just his pants getting soaked in water and his underwear. And somebody took a picture of this. This fan apparently did the do in his own pants and refused to leave the game, Bogic. That's how diehard a Steeler fan was. Says he would rather sit in soaked poopy pants than leave a Steeler game in which they lost to the Raiders and Ben Roethlisberger looked like his pants in this game. The question arises, do you have to leave a Steeler game if you poop your pants?
I mean, yeah, the answer is yes. And then just for the record, I did the adult thing here. I did not look at the picture. I don't need to see this.
Oh, the picture's great. It's just his bare, skinny legs with the bottom of his bump sitting there with the Bettis jersey ever so long.
Yeah, I'll be fine not actually seeing this. I'll just take your play-by-play as the only record of it.
Oh,
but, and I guess I have to I got to ask you as the expert. I mean, yes, you've got to leave, but before you leave, you do have to, I guess, clean up. But don't the underpants become like the initial toilet paper here? Like you clean yourself as much as you can with the underpants, and then you just throw them away, and then you clean yourself with normal methods, and then you clean your pants so you can put your pants back on sans underwear to get back home. Why is he cleaning the underwear as if he needs to reuse the undies here?
I'm going to be fair to Mr. Bettis here. You can't actually see the underwear. I was going under the assumption the underwear was there with the pants as well because it's a big clean job. I have done this where I have cleaned the underwear because it's a good pair I don't want to throw out. And I'll soak it real good. And then I'll obviously wash it real good because I'm disgusting like this. But I'll tell you, Bogus, you know, this year 17 games. Usually the 16, usually get 8 games, maybe 9 home games. Those are precious. You can't be leaving a stadium because you couldn't hold your bowels. So I almost had an incident like this during a Giant Packer game. I've mentioned it several times where I had a lot of Mexican lasagna at a tailgate and then Jump Around came on and it jumped right out of me. Let's just put it that way. And I did not leave the stadium. Now, there was 5 minutes left. I ended up in a stall and people slamming on as the game ended. The Giants won. It was a big effort. JPP with a pick six. But nonetheless, I've been there where this guy is. This is not a baseball game where there's 82 of them. Football game, you have to stay. And if you have an accident in your pants, there's no way you're getting me to leave.
Yeah, see, again, we're going to have to agree to disagree here. I understand the scarcity of NFL home games. And even if you have the extra 9-1 here, but I think some things require your exit from a game, no matter how important it is. And
he had an exit required. There's no.
Yeah, I know. So we needed a second. One exit leads to the other, I guess. And sure, the severity of it plays into effect here. I guess there certain things could be cleaned up and you could rebound pretty quickly. But if you're left at the sink pantsless, I mean, the shame of just standing there with the bottom of your butt cheeks hanging out where everyone knows what you're doing coming in. Like, I don't even like to go to number two normally in a crowded bathroom where everyone knows what I'm doing. This guy's cleaning himself because he did it in his pants and apparently doesn't seem to be embarrassed by it. You can't go back to your seat. You just gotta leave. Clean before you go, but you gotta leave.
What do you think he ate at the tailgate?
Oh, I mean, there's no telling. It's Pittsburgh. I'm assuming it had to involve some kind of, like, tubed grilled meat, right? I mean, there's gotta be brats, something.
Our buddy and CBS Sports Radio personality Andrew Filippone was at the Steelers tailgates, and he was taking all sorts of good videos. There were people tossing tortellini in pots. There were a lot of big sausages being eaten. So I got to imagine there was a lot of combination. I think that's what did me in during my Giants-Packer incident was. It wasn't just the Mexican lasagna. It was, did you need the two hot dogs with it? Did you need whatever meatballs were being made as well? Sometimes it gets to be a combo. And then if you're throwing some cheap beer too, right? If you're drinking Keystone Light there in the parking lot and you get basically, you rip through 10 of those before, and by the way, a 1 p.m. start local time, you're talking about your body's not even ready for what you're putting into the body by 8 a.m. at that tailgate. You're creating a massacre. And frankly, I'm shocked this doesn't happen more often. In fact, I would say before social media and cameras on phones, I would venture to guess that several Steeler fans have done number two in their pants following a tailgate and tried to find their way through. But this is the first time now it's getting caught in camera. It's kind of like instant replay, right? We think that umpires and referees have gotten worse. No, they've always been this way. We just have now the footage to see how bad they are. I think now we just have the footage to see this. Now, if there was going to be ever a Steeler jersey you wore too, Bogus, while going number two in your pants, doesn't the bad knockoff Bettis fit this perfectly?
I mean, only an offensive lineman would have been would have made more sense in this. Some big sloppy
a Castro jersey.
Exactly. And it's not a judgment about David or the individual player. It's just thinking a guy that's over 320 is the one that's gonna soil
Von
himself
Hoffen
during
jersey.
A game. Yeah. This is all about Kimo von Ohlhofen. He broke Carson Palmer's knee and then ruined his pants.
So this is a question, I think, for the audience as we're on coast to coast in North America. What fan base do you think is least likely to have a fan go number two in their pants and stay through a game?
Least
like, who's
likely
a clean
is a tough
fan
one.
Base? Yeah, who's a clean fan base?
That's a tough one because there's so many people, obviously, in these buildings. It opens up to all sorts of different demographics.
Right,
and every
but then you also
team
have to figure
in
food at the tailgate. Like, I'm shocked this doesn't happen more often at Arrowhead. That's 2 days of RV brisket eating. And yeah. nobody in a Larry Johnson jersey has gone number two in their pants and been caught on camera?
Unless the RVs present a unique and more forgiving bathroom situation than the parking lot porta-potties, which may lead you to forego like the initial tremor of a movement. You go, I can't go to this porta-potty. And then you keep eating, you keep drinking, and now you go past the point of no return. But maybe an Arrowhead RVs, you just get inside. You're temperature controlled. You got almost a real bathroom. You feel much more comfortable taking care of business ahead of time out there, I bet.
Yeah, I would also say Seahawk fans probably very sloppy. It's a lot of coffee running through you early in the morning. I hate to stereotype the coffee capital here of the U.S., but we know a lot of people after they have their morning coffee, usually. Now the morning coffee followed by whatever you're tailgating with, I think there could be big splatter situations going on up in Seattle. So just something to ponder here. Is this maybe
glad
this
you came back for this.
I did, yes. What a morning it has been. What a DA, no voice, me, do I have a baby, do I not have a baby, I don't, Steeler fans going number two, we're all here. We'll keep dissecting all of this, and maybe we'll ask Ross Tucker, has he ever witnessed this in a stadium? He will join us next. It's the DA show, it's Mraz, it's Bogish, what a wild Tuesday morning, we continue on next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.